Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Sundays with the Modern. Each Sunday, with exceptions for holidays and the like, we invite prominent local artists, curators, educators, and others to select works on view here at the Modern and begin a conversation. The presentations are recorded and available as podcasts at our website, themodern.org. After this Sunday, we take a brief hiatus for the holidays and resume on January 9th with artist John Pomara. Our speaker today is sculptor Chris Powell. Chris is a longtime friend of the museum and well-known to many of you. He has taught classes through the education department that have evoked thoughtfulness and delight for both children and adults. Chris holds bachelor's and master's degrees in ceramics and has been on the faculty of TCU since 1989. He is represented locally by William Campbell Contemporary Art.
Yeah. Thank you to the museum for asking me as well. Let's go all the way to the back gallery. Well, this talk is pretty short, but there's a lot of introduction to do. It seems like the most discussion Terry and I have had has been about the speakers. It's uncomfortable for me to hear my own voice. And in my teaching, I think my voice is my biggest tool. And as we heard, you know, I'm teaching everyone from kindergartners to college age, or adult even. But it seems like in the past few years, it's been like kindergartners and college age kids. So I've got like two kinds of voices for them. I've got one that's real, let me check my notes here. It's a calming, nurturing voice, like, it's going to be okay. You can see your mother later. Then there's another voice that is like speaking to a friend one-on-one. Those are the kindergartners, you know. So, and I also have one group that I use a real stern voice with, like, be sure you get this done and clean up after yourself. And then there's another voice I use with the kindergarten group, which is more like a voice in the desert, you know, preparing the way for the Lord. And they're right there with me all the time. I'm thinking that this is going to be a very participatory discussion, so I'm going to ask y'all to do some things as we go through. If you don't want to participate, just close your eyes. And it'll all be better, and I'll just go to the next person. So that's that. I titled this little talk, If It Plays in Peoria. Oh, the other thing, I was really glad that I wasn't asked to talk about Andy Warhol, because I didn't know about Andy until they brought out Songs for Drella, you know. But Vernon Fisher has had an impact on my entire life, so this was a better thing. But I'm calling the show If It Plays in Peoria because that's the first place I saw Vernon's work. There's a little museum. It's a museum of art and science, which has seemed to be kind of appropriate for Vernon's imagery. He had a show there, and I wouldn't even, at this point, just walking by stuff, but I stopped because there was a Texas sign, road sign, and it was a big canvas with words stamped out on it, and found out this guy was Fort Worth. I had just married a girl from Fort Worth, and we had moved up to Peoria. Right across the street from the museum was a Kmart. Right downtown was a theater, the Paramount Theater, in which I guess some vaudeville guy says, if it plays here in Peoria, it'll play any place. Well, the Kmart's gone, Paramount Theater's gone, but we still have Vernon Fisher, so I don't know what that says. One other thing before I really get rolling. The first kind of talk I gave in public was to a group at Austin College, and it was open to the whole campus. I was showing my work there. In the crowd was a Greek specialist, and she knew everything Greek. So I was showing slides and talking about things that I liked, and I misspoke about a Hellenistic piece that was really a classical Greek piece, and it spoiled the whole talk for her. So I'm more about truthiness, you know, and if it's, I wish I were more the Jon Stewart Daily Show kind of guy, but I think I'm more the truthiest kind of truthiness. So we'll just go with that. I wanted to start here, I believe. Nope, I still want to talk about Vernon Fisher. The name Vernon Fisher, I'm thinking, what does it mean? My name, Chris Avery Powell, doesn't mean anything. Chris is short for Christopher, so then it means something. Powell means son of somebody else. That doesn't mean anything. Avery My mother picked it out off of a bottle of hot sauce. The Tabasco sauce is made on Avery Island. So, but Vernon Fisher, what does it mean? What does it mean? So Vern is youthful or young at heart. Vernon is someone that lives in a grove of some kind of trees. I can't read my writing. But his last name, Fisher, is the one that really interests me. You know, it was listed as someone who fishes or sells fish. Well, that's no good. A fisher is one of these little creatures. He's a mammal about this size that lives up the Canadian-U.S. border. And he makes his living not fishing, but like catching little bunnies and those kinds of sweet things and eating them. So I'm going with that kind of name for Vernon. You know, that felt good to me. Also, the fisher, its scientific name is Martin, and I can't pronounce the other thing. The Indians called this guy a Pecam, a Pequa, or a Weejack. So I thought all those were good words. Now, the thing about the fisher, it is one of the few animals that can take down a porcupine. That leads us to this painting, which I think is the key to Vernon's work, because I got there through, y'all are with me. This plane, the Germans named it the Flying Porcupine. So we're all getting there now. It is the short Sutherland flying boat. You know, at the first of World War II, the Germans were real good at sinking ships, and the English were not good about sinking submarines, so they became really good about saving sailors out of the water. And this is one of the ships that they came up with. They eventually put armament on it, and it was quite defensive as well. That's why the Germans thought it was like a porcupine. It is the S-25 Sutherland flying boat. So if we look at number 25, no, let's look at number, let's look at the S's. So we come along and find an S. It's a snout. There's another S on here somewhere. A strong, some, sleeps. Now these are not going as snakes. This is kind of getting us to this meaning that I'm wanting to do, but if we want to see whether Vernon thinks we're on the right track or not, let's go to number 25. Remember, this is the S-25. The S-25, it's an A. Now, we remember that Vernon was a teacher for all those years, and he's given us an A for this kind of interpretation of the meaning of this piece. What I want to do... Any questions about this piece? Let's go... I tell you what. So, thank you for reminding me of that. Where is 73? So that confirms this deal about the porcupine and the fisher. Now, there will be prizes given at the end of the talk if you can remember some of these words. So that's all the time I'm giving you. Look at them. Let's come in here. And we're going to be here a while. So park yourselves on a seat. We really should have some seats because we're going to stay here a while. Now I need my bag of tricks.
Your lovely assistant.
Yeah, thank you. I will need several. Every time you hear a noise, pop the gun.
Got it.
So let's start here with this painting. So for these things to be valid, you need to know that I've a long history with the artist. My father-in-law was Vernon Fisher's principal, high school principal. So this gives a lot of validity to what I have to say about this particular piece. When he was in high school, all the blackboards were black, and at this time, they were slowly changing over blackboards to being green boards. And Vernon pushed to have this done in his school so that he could collect all this material. Now, oddly enough, I was in the first grade at the time, and I went to a four-room elementary school, so it's first through fourth grade, and they were all blackboards. Well, the floor, I mean, this was a, I think it was built like 1900, and it was this beautiful old building, but they decided to build a new new elementary school. First grade, we had blackboards. Go to the blackboards, Chris, and I knew right where to go. So we move into the new building, and they're all green boards. The teachers still said, go to the blackboard. And I think that that's why I've had a problem with education since then. And okay, so now we are ready to talk about some things and do some little experiments. Lovely assistant, I'll need that later. Oh, would you place this on the, so I won't have to, just on the cart over there so we don't have to worry with it. So I'm really interested in this whole kind of spiral thing. I'm extremely interested in the fact that we're pouring a liquid into a pool of a liquid, and that pool becomes a hole in the space, and we're pouring right on down through, and we see that kind of spiral, which refers, you know, to the title of this piece, which I can't pronounce. It's that twisting motion of liquids in space. And then we come on down to this little deal that's also dripping down. But I thought it would be fun for some of us to try these tops out. Come around to where everybody can see. I need you two guys. Get these going for us. And while they're doing that, I want y'all to be thinking about tops and spinning. Good job. Sweet. Anytime this talk gets boring, well, no, I started to say anytime the talk gets boring, start spinning again. But anytime you feel like it, spin again. So, back here, just real quick on that vortex or that spiral. You know, we're looking down on the plumbing here. Then we're in a field of trees that are coming out of the surface, and it's on a wall with the text. I don't know. Let's jump over here to the... I'll tell you kind of the way I'm first intended to carry the talk. I've spent most of the time in this room in preparation for the talk, and there was a little girl comes through, and she points out to her family that this longitudinal line cuts across the knife blade. And that was kind of disturbing to her. But that kind of is the way I was hoping that this talk would go. In the very beginning, I thought, well, I'll just go in and just tell people what I am seeing, because I'm not really interested in giving answers. I'm not interested in asking questions, although those things are good. You know, I don't know where I was going with that. Oh, it's because of what that little girl was doing there. Oh, I've got something about that globe. So this is a fun one. Carol, that's your job. Okay. Where did we go? I think that we're running out of things here. There was a lot more about this piece. I'm kind of interested in, well, the thing that really interests me about this room is that we're doing everything from behind the wall to the surface of the wall, you know, coming out of the wall, to sculpture sitting, well, objects sitting in the middle of the floor. And I think it's the thing that I find most interesting about this room, other than its sound. And the quality of sound in this room is so amazing to me, because of course we have the auditory sound, but to me we've got like this visual sound. I can't help looking at this wall, you know, it being a word that is a sound itself, kong, kong, kong. Good one. And then you have all of this debris on the floor, which is again that visual sound. I can hear those things falling and being ripped out of the wall. Then you've got the complete silence of this boat, you know. So I'm really interested in those three or four different kinds of sounds that are happening there. I was thinking about sound, and the way I use sound the most, I wake up in the middle of the night, and we are close enough to the railroad tracks that the railroad is a trigger for me to go back to sleep. So when I hear them honking, they're, you know, I promise myself I don't open my eyes if I wake up, and I wait for the whistle, and somehow it puts me, so these sounds in here, and we don't know when they're going to happen. Although I did sit down. Okay, so with that sound, I tried to write that sound down. Let's see what I wrote. Does anyone have a clock? What time is it? Exactly. Where's my pencil? Oh, does anyone have a pencil? Here it is. 1:20, so we are going to say that that happened at 1:19, because we've been messing around. I wrote that sound down as a W-H-I-I-O-C-H. Whishk. What time is it now? Exactly. 1:21. Do y'all remember that awful sound? Time, please. What time is it? Have you been spinning your globe? What time is it?
Am I supposed to say?
Exactly. Okay, thank you. 1:21 and a half. Okay. Well, there went, it was a small world. Let me think. Where's my list? We'll get off of my cards, and if they get out of order, you'll be hearing these things again. We could stay here for just a minute to hear the last few noises. We go from these funny noises to some different kinds of noises. Even that thing that I called the whoosh, that thing that Terry didn't even know to pop. I mean, can anyone else spell that word for me that we heard? That was as close as I could get. I'm not going to make y'all wait all the way through the cycle to hear it again, but I thought about doing that. Okay. So that was an easy one. You know, that was a boink with birdies. But maybe we've had enough. Let me see if everything in the bag has been... Oh, I think that we'll do it one more time. Oh, no, I've got something else. So about, I was going to talk about the drain and use this demo. Don't miss out on this. Thank you. Let's see if there's anything else. We have one more set of sounds coming. Michael, Kathy. When the sounds go, let's do everything. One more set of sounds. Don't miss it. The recording's been tripped.
Ready?
So the sounds get a little scarier. I wanted to give everybody a piece of paper. This will make itself apparent a little later in the deal. And then we're going to move out of this room. Did you guys get the piece of paper?
Thank you.
So if you have questions or notes or comments for the museum, you can write this on it. And then as you leave the museum, just go ahead and put it in the trash. Let's go into... Right here in front of this piece. I think, yes, you can. Oh, you know what? There was one more sound maker. You can put it in that bag. We missed that sound maker. Let me put up this stuff. Researching this piece, let me check my notes to see what I came up with. Oh, yeah. You know, I boiled down the atom bomb and the more destructive hydrogen bomb to this simple equation. So, E equals M times C squared. Now they tell me, the mathematicians tell me, you can put anything in there and work it out and it'll give you the truth behind this thing. So if you divide both sides by E, E becomes 1 and you get this huge explosion. Now, if you let a woman in a bikini stand in for E and you divide both sides by a bikini, a great big explosion happens. Sorry. Let's quickly look at Pumpkin Field, and then we're going to come back and look at bunnies real quick. So, when we were in the Far Gallery, I'm really disturbed by Vernon's piece that has all the cast hands, only because I hate fiberglass. It's like I used it to repair a canoe once, and every time I see the stuff, I itch all over. And one of the things that I really like about this piece is the material itself. I have an affinity for plaster and for casting, so you combine the two, and I'm in love with the material. So all of that was just to say that material does carry meaning. I'm supposed to stay away from the artwork. I have two sons that worked as guards, and they said it will be a successful talk if you stay away from the artwork. So, the orientation of the image and the orientation of the seam lines are the thing that I'm most attracted to besides surface color. So that was a big deal right there. Let's go in and look at bunnies in light. Y'all stop me at any time. Okay. One of my favorite works in the exhibition. And let me tell you why. In my studio, I'm currently modeling a bunny, and it's just like number 3. Now, since this talk is about Vernon Fisher, that's all I'm going to say unless I have questions. Oh, good question. Let me think. Well, title, you know, in 6 in the light... So you've got 4 bunnies that are in the light, and you've got 2 guys hit the fields up there, and they're in the light. A question about my work. Oh, I'm glad you asked. I was asked to make a proposal for the city of Fort Worth. They were going to do a roundabout on Elizabeth Boulevard. And I had 3 weeks to make this proposal, and I proposed two columns like I like doing, and these two columns were facing each other and slightly offset, so when you were traveling down Elizabeth, it looked like a triumphal arch. And then when you're coming up Fifth Avenue, they looked like a triumphal column, or I guess that's what they are, you know, columns that were erected for victories. I don't know what they... The night before I was to make the proposal, I decided the world didn't need another triumphal arch or a victorious column, and I proposed a bunny. Went into the meeting after... And it was almost as if I'd done the proposal with a crayon. Actually, I used a crayon. And the committee was not taken with my proposal. One of the folks on the committee says, "What possessed you to propose a bunny?" And I said, "Well, I just thought the bunny would be a good thing, you know." And so it fell. I said, "And besides Elizabeth, Ryan had a rabbit hutch in her backyard, and that went over like a lead balloon." So,
did she really?
I don't think so. It's truthiness again. Since they didn't want to do that, I went to the studio, built a 8-foot by 4-foot pallet on casters, and then I'm building this bunny that he hangs over the edge, and he's probably 10. He is my height. If I'm standing on the platform, he is as tall as I am, plus ears sticking up. His head is as tall as I am. And he sticks over the end in the back about a foot, his little tail, and his head sticks over about almost 2 feet in the front. So he's a big, big bunny. But he's a lot like this, except his nose is sticking up in the air, and he's got one little ear down. And that's why I love this piece so much. And don't... Who asked? Trying to ask questions I didn't know the answer to? Thank you. So you're welcome to ask questions, but I need to know the answers. Okay. Yes.
Pillsbury. I've been emailing you.
Did I
just got you.
Sweet.
I just
sweet.
See your name on
good to meet you. These guys. What guys?
Just wanted to say hello.
Thank you.
I saw your name downstairs.
Thank you. I think I'm gonna need some props here.
Okay.
And I think what we'll do is park ourselves right in the way. Okay, let me get... Okay, so the heart of darkness, you know, from this one point, we're seeing a lot of it, you know, a lot of the colonialism. And throughout Vernon's work, we get a space that is blank on the map, whether it's this map or the bunny map or those in the other gallery where we get the guy pouring into the hole. You know, there's an empty spot on the map from this. But what I'm thinking is I've got two really important places I go, the library and the museum. The museum is the sexy friend of the library. So, and luckily, the library had a really beautiful copy of this book. Look at all the dots and the grids. Hold up your little pieces of paper. Check out the grids, you know. I don't know. Maybe I don't need to say any more about that. Let me look at my notes. I think that's plenty on that. Let's go right over. I think it's time we talked and tried to find out a little more about Vernon. Let's come over and look at this piece. Now, I brought a phone. I know you're not supposed to have phones in the museum. But I thought if one person knew, could answer our questions about Vernon, It would be Mickey Mouse. Luckily, I have a video phone that will connect us right to Mickey. So, and since Mickey is such an important person, I wrote down the questions so I would know what to ask him. Let me call. Could you put Mickey on? Hey, Mickey, do you have a minute to talk? Tell us what he said.
Wanted me to say hi.
Yeah, and he says, talking to me is swell. Okay, so, thank you, Mickey. What can you tell us about Vernon? Vernon Fisher? I know there's been a lot of copyright issues. What else? Mickey, don't be like that. I've got a lot of other questions.
Lots to do.
Yeah, he's got to get going. There's a lot to do. Maybe that's enough. Let's go in and look at 84 sparrows real quick, and then I want to end up on the piece out in the hallway. I've almost put y'all through all the ringer. Hold on.
No.
This is the one I want y'all here for.
Okay.
So the first time I saw this piece installed, it was over in the old building. And the museum had asked Ted Pillsbury to come in and talk about it. And there was Ted and Vernon. And they dissected, two of the most brilliant people I've ever met. They dissected this thing. They talked about the arc here, the arc there. They talked about the shape of this. They talked about the shape of this window. They talked about the text. They talked about the abstract painting that he cut up and destroyed. They talked about finding, they talked about everything. They talked about these words. We were there an hour talking about this. I enjoyed every minute of it because I was trying to decide which bird I liked the best. And I think it was that one. Let's go right out there and wind this up. Okay, I do need a prop. It's a little booklet in there. Sweet. So, I heard a question before this talk started, and since I wasn't on the payroll, I wasn't willing to answer it. This is an actual constellation. Within that constellation is my favorite star, the Alpha Sculpturus. Now, I don't know which we should look because it would be the biggest one. So it's probably that one right there. Let me back up a minute. Y'all hold on to that. Last week, this gets back to my sleeping and sounds putting me to sleep. I can also wake up at any time I want. So last week when the Geminid showers came through, I woke up at 2 o'clock, bundled myself up, went out and laid in the front yard, and for 20 minutes nothing happened. Then I went back inside, made coffee, went back outside, laid down, and I saw like 18 shooting stars. I've lived 52 years and didn't know where the Gemini constellation was, but every one of these shooting stars was coming right out of it. So it was easy for me to go back to charts and see what that thing looked like. I've always tried to find that thing and never could. Oh, back to this guy. This star right here. Oh, that was too close. He is a type B giant. He's 680 light years away. He's 1,700 times brighter than our sun. And at one time they thought there was a black hole orbiting him. And I think that I was going to go some all sculptors, but I'm not going to do that. There are prizes So who can tell me the first word on Vernon's chart? We didn't even talk about it. Oh, that was a good thing. And aardvark is a Dutch, the Dutch name, the aardvark. The Dutch also named the fisher. How in the world can that be a coincidence? Who said that? Okay. Another question. What's my favorite animal?
Rabbit.
No, it's not. It's a sparrow. Who said that? Who said sparrow? I thought it was you.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank y'all for coming.